Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening to all the Sports is Job listeners. I have another awesome guest, another amazing guest with a tremendous amount of years of experience. And one thing I was telling all of you guys about last episode is I want to focus on bringing a more diverse guest list, people from across the sports industry, not strictly just marketing or business operations or event management, really across the whole sports industry to expose you to all the other opportunities out there and the different paths that you may not be aware about. So our guest today is currently a senior research analyst for Sports Info Solutions. He spent time with ESPN for nearly 15 years. And in the past 23 years, he's also has been a play-by-play announcer and a writer, freelance writer as well. So I'd like to welcome Mark Simon to the podcast. How are we doing today?
Hi, thanks for having me. Looking forward to talking.
So the one thing I want to start off, and I think a lot of people, when they look at your resume, they'll probably go straight to the ESPN, right? Like, everybody loves ESPN. And I want to get to what you did there. And you mentioned the story that about in the first few weeks, you know, something happened. But the big thing for me, I saw you post kind of like a letter on Twitter in 2018, correct? You were talking about how I'm choosing to leave the organization. And I'm sure a lot of people out there are like, you're leaving ESPN? Like, why? Like, ESPN, this is ESPN. But you talked about, you mentioned in that letter saying, hey, you know, my role is evolving into something that I may not be comfortable dealing with. And I think that's very important, because I think some young sport professionals or just industry professionals will find them in a similar position where maybe their role wasn't what they thought it was going to be, or is evolving into something that they don't want it to be. So how did you handle that situation? Like, how did you, what was the thought process and ultimately what made you make that decision?
Oh, wow. All right. So yeah, I was there from 2002 to the very beginning of 2018. And I saw different things evolve there. When I started, I worked in the what was called the research department. The research department evolved into the stats and information group. And we went from having 20 employees working on the various shows that we were working on to research wound up having, I think, more than 40. So we more than doubled in size. They moved us to a different area. They built new buildings that we wound up in. And a lot of things change over time in any job that you're in. And when I got there in 2002, baseball was one of the highest priorities that the company had, because it rated well, it was popular, and it was on frequently. There were games Sunday, Monday, Wednesday. There was Baseball Tonight, which was on 7 days a week compared to the one day a week that it's on now. As the cable industry and then the internet got more fragmented, and you had the development of things like MLB Network and the NFL Network and all the different TV networks that could really offer specialized programming, and the websites that can offer very specialized content, and Twitter and streaming services and so forth, ESPN changed. And one of the primary changes was that football and basketball became higher priorities, and rightfully so, because they rated more highly than baseball. I worked in a couple of different jobs there. I was the head research person on Baseball Tonight for an extended period of time. I actually started as a temp working, helping our game broadcast, did that for a little bit, then moved on to Baseball Tonight, and then moved into a position editing a blog and running a social media account that we took from 0 to 1.5 million, the ESPN Stats Info Twitter account. As things evolved there, baseball became less of a priority. Baseball Tonight got cut from 7 days a week to, I think, 5, then 3, then eventually to 1. And my role within the company changed quite a bit. And they wanted me to work on certain projects that, quite frankly, I don't think I was very good at. And I didn't know that I was necessarily going to get good at them, and I didn't know that my enthusiasm for being on them was going to be high. So I had started looking for work, and I didn't want to be someone that the decision was made for me. I didn't want to be someone that got laid off. I started looking for other places to go. I had made a lot of contacts over the 16 years. One was with a group that had a relationship with ESPN, a business relationship with the baseball side, Sports Info Solutions, which was originally known as Baseball Info Solutions. And their baseball deal with ESPN ended in 2017. And I reached out to them and said, I'm sorry, I was the liaison to them. So I talked to them a lot. I'm sorry this didn't work out. And one, the president of the company said to me, you know, if you were ever, I know that you had talked about leaving ESPN. If you were serious, we might be interested in creating a role for you. And one thing led to another. And I left. There were no hard feelings. To be frank, I didn't perform I didn't perform up to the Mark Simon standards in my final 16 months or so that I had in the previous 14 and a half years. So it was a good time to get out. Everyone was very understanding. The ESPN people were very cooperative in everything. I had a very nice party to say goodbye, and I still keep in touch with a lot of them today. And that's how I moved on. Sometimes you have to come to a realization, like you might think that you're going to work for a place for the rest of your life. That was kind of what I thought when I started at ESPN, but it doesn't always work out that way. Things change.
And that's interesting for me, because that level of accountability you talked about, like you weren't performing to the standards of Mark Simon yep. standards. And I think a lot of us young sport professionals, being at 23 years old and a lot of other people out there, we're trying to build that sense of accountability. We want to make sure that we say, hey, we're not performing to our standards, and be real with that. How did you learn that sense of accountability? Was that something you always had?
Yeah, I think that's an inherited familial trait. Self-awareness is really, I'm an overthinker, and overthinkers do well in the stats and information group, because we're always analyzing things, right? You're looking at a player's stat line and you're looking for that one really cool, really important, really funny kind of tidbit. And you could look at a stat for 20 minutes and then come up with something that was particularly good, whereas most of the rest of the world's going to look at it for like 20 seconds and be like, okay, moving on. So I would teach any young person to develop their self-awareness instinct, to kind of know when they're doing well and when they're doing poorly. I had an arrangement with the last few managers that I had at ESPN that I would report everything to them. I would report all of the good and I would report all of the screw-ups. And there were screw-ups. There were definitely times when we ran things on TV that I'm not happy that we ran on TV, or we tweeted something that I wish we hadn't tweeted. But I was always honest about it. And what resulted from that was a trust from me to them, and a trust from them to me, and them having my back in certain instances that led to me getting opportunities to do things that other people in the department weren't getting to do. I was loaned out to ESPN.com for, I think it was like six to, I think it was for 10 days a year, 6 to 10 days a year. No one else in my department had that privilege. But I could basically work for a day where I could play reporter at a major league baseball game. And I could get to do some things that other people wouldn't get to do. And I think that that came as a result of the accountability that you're talking about. So I would tell people, it's a good thing to establish that kind of relationship with your boss. And even when it sucks, to tell them that you messed up, do it anyway. It's worth it.
And it seems that it's obvious that everything you talked about, you have that passion for baseball. And I'm sure everybody knows this as well. And I want to use this story, or this picture you posted yesterday that you got from your childhood friend of you wearing a glove, Joe Rudy glove, that was three times the size. And I don't know if this was the same for you, but as a child, I used to wear this Luis Castillo Chargers jersey that was probably five times the size of me, but I love the Chargers. I love football so much. I just wanted to put it on. So to see that you were wearing a glove three times the size of your hand, I see that as a sign like, hey, this guy loves baseball. So what is your favorite? Is there a memory that you can recall, I guess, just any baseball memory where you're like, yeah, I love baseball?
So the story that I like to tell that foreshadows what happened in my career came when I was 10 years old and I went to a baseball game between the Mets and the Astros. And my uncle used to work for, his wife used to work for an advertising agency, and we got great seats. And we were like 10 rows behind one of the dugouts. And it was awesome. And 10-year-old kid at a baseball game, a doubleheader nonetheless, which doesn't really exist anymore. 5 o'clock start. We left the ballpark at like 11:30. Boy, I get to stay up late. How awesome is this? In that game, the Mets beat the Astros, the first game, the Mets beat the Astros 16-4. And I kept score. And a lot of kids these days probably don't keep score, but I kept score back then. And I kept score diligently. And I've got my $2 odd lot scorebook that we had bought that had like 30 sheets in it that you could enter things in. And I'm writing everything down. And my dad had taught me how to do the calculations so that I could compute each pitcher's stat line. And we got to the end of the game, and I said, I think something's wrong here. I have the Mets as scoring 16 runs, but all of the runs were unearned. And we were like, well, that seems kind of weird. So now flash forward many years later to when I'm working at ESPN, and I had a conversation with someone because the Mets won a game that day when I was working at ESPN by the same score, 16-4. And I was like, whoa, that's a flashback. And I was talking to someone from the Elias Sports Bureau, and we were talking about it, and he looked it up. And sure enough, that was the record for the most runs by a team where all of the runs were unearned. And 10-year-old me was right. And I look back at that as it being my first real research project for baseball that many years later would, you know, come into play in my job.
And it seems that you found, because you have this model that you say is your whole career has been based on, tell me a story. And it seems like at an early age, you found out you could do this through numbers. And I'm such the opposite. Like numbers, like the way you were talking about, you spend and you see these certain things when you look at numbers, I don't see it. So it's interesting to see you to have this huge interest in it. Were you... Now, you mentioned that you kind of knew this was your career from a young age, but I feel like during your time in the sports industry, I feel like people maybe weren't using numbers, or they didn't see that as a career path of being a research analyst or using stats as their job to tell a story. So did you always know, like, how did you know that you could actually do what you're doing?
So another thing that happened in the early 1980s was that I was a voracious reader. Because I was lousy at sports. Like that picture that you saw, if you stood me next to the other kids, I was the shortest kid and I batted 12th. So I stunk. But what I could do better than them, what I could do really well, was I could add, subtract, multiply, and divide. And I could read. I was the kid that on the book order would order, you know, more books than the other kids. And I would have the most books on the reading you know, the whatever reading charity thing that we were doing. So I read a lot of baseball books, and my parents started getting me like adult baseball books when I was very young, including the Bill James Baseball Abstract. For people that don't know Bill James, he is the father of the godfather, they like to say, of the sabermetric movement. He's kind of the person that if you watch the movie Moneyball, Moneyball is kind of inspired by Bill James. And I was reading those things, those books, and I did not understand the math, but it was there. And like, there were one or two things that I could get. He was like an example of how statistical analysis has changed. Back then he was like, okay, if the player has 150 hits, give them 1 point. If they have 160 hits, give them 2 points. And I could do that. So 10-year-old me could handle that. There was a lot of stuff much more complicated than that, and it kind of gave me an introduction. But the one thing that I really got from reading those books was organization of information into charts and things that you could read where you could pick up a lot of data in a short amount of space and short amount of time. Like, here's how, the one that I remember from the book that I'm referring to is, here's how the Cardinals won the division, and here's how the Dodgers lost the NL West. And it was laid out in chart form. Here are the games. Here's a half a sentence description of what happened. Here's the score. Here's the information you need. And that stayed with me for 35 years or so. And that that is, I think, what happened at an early age that showed me that, hey, you can use stats. At ESPN, when I got there, for the most part, the ESPN idea of statistical analysis was fun fact. Like, this guy had 12 home runs on weekends. That's the most of any player in the majors. This guy had the most triples by a guy whose last name begins with F, that sort of thing. I love those. I'm all over those every day of the week. I'm looking for plenty of them, but there's a whole other avenue by which you can go down, which is the more analytical way of doing it. And in about, what was it, maybe 2009, 2010, ESPN started doing hiring that was more of a fit for that. We hired people for our department. We hired people for Baseball Tonight. Aaron Boone walked into a meeting, the first Baseball Tonight meeting. The first thing that Aaron Boone said in the Baseball Tonight meeting, I read off a stat and he said, "What's the sample size?" And I kind of looked around. And I was like, "This is good. He's he's smart." And from there, ESPN kind of changed its approach to be a more analytical approach. And I think you see that that's a reflection of what's going on in the sports, I guess, statistical environment today.
And I'm not going to lie. When I watch football, right, you talk about those stats like, oh, the first person to score 3 touchdowns with this last name. And I've always wondered, I'm like, who are these people that find these stats? Like, these are things that you have to, And that's super, super cool because I didn't know that there was positions specifically for that. And I think I read something about how, you know, there was almost like 40 people that were actually focused on doing these and finding these stats and this information. Now, I want to get back to the ESPN because I'm sure the listeners look like, okay, let's get back to the ESPN. Let's hear Bob's experience there. And you turned a temp job into a full-time job. And you mentioned within those first 3 weeks, something happened where it set you up for success for the 15 plus years. So let's talk about that for a little bit.
Sure. Let me set that up by telling, I have two good stories. I'll tell them both within this space. To get to ESPN, if you were to apply, you would be applying to a human resources department that gets hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of resumes. I hate applying for jobs that way, and I would never tell someone to apply for a job that way. You need to find the people that are the specific decision makers, the people that are doing the hiring. So my way of doing that was as follows. In 2001, the Mariners and the Indians played a baseball game in which the Mariners were winning 12-0. The Indians came back and won it 15-14. It was on Sunday Night Baseball. It's a famous game in those circles. I caught the end of the game and I said, you know, that game seems familiar. And I jogged my memory bank. And one thing that I had that was kind of my other hobby at the time was collecting Charlie Brown books, Peanuts. And sure enough, there is a game in Peanuts where Charlie Brown has a 50-0 lead with 2 outs in the 9th inning and he gives up 51 runs to lose the game. So there's a writer at ESPN, Jason Stark, who writes a column about useless information. He loves stories like that. And he has an email at the end of the column that says, email me if you have ideas. So I emailed him, dear Jason, 50-0, 12-0. Can't you see it? And sure enough, in his next column, loyal reader Mark Simon reports this, like 4 paragraphs. It was great. I still have the article. And so I said, you know what? I'm at this newspaper that I'm working for now. I'm never going to be made full-time here. This is the door has been opened for me very, very, very slightly. Let me take a shot. So I wrote Jason Stark, dear Jason, you don't know me. I don't know you. The only way we know each other is through Charlie Brown. However, I'm just looking for a name. Can you give me the name of the person who does the hiring for Baseball Tonight? He wrote back immediately, like within an hour. He gave me a name. I wrote that person. As it turned out, that person wasn't the person who was doing the hiring, but he wrote back too, just by blind luck. He wrote back and gave me another name. That person was doing the hiring for the research department. And when I showed up at the interview 6 months later, I walked in the door and I said to myself, I'm not losing this on merit. If I'm going down here, I'm going down to someone that they knew. I'm gonna come through with a really good interview. And things worked out. And I wound up taking a temp job. I think it was $12 an hour. No benefits or anything like that. But in the first few weeks, they introduced me to what the job was. And I'm like, you got to be kidding. It was printing out player biographies and printing out newspaper articles. This is back in the day when a lot of people weren't sophisticated with the internet. And the announcers for the games didn't necessarily use, you know, Netscape Navigator or whatever source we were using. So you had to mail them at their hotels. And it all seemed like, I was like, this is it? I can do so much more. I'm a writer. Come on. So I went to the producer for Sunday Night Baseball. I said, look, I'm sitting here right now with nothing to do. I can do more for you. He says, okay, opening day, Angels, Indians. The Indians pitcher is Bartolo Colon. We know lots of things about Bartolo Colon. Everybody knows lots of things about Bartolo Colon. The Angels pitcher is Jared Washburn. We don't know anything about Jared Washburn. Write something for us that educates us on Jared Washburn. So I was like, okay, I now am going to play reporter. I had an ace up my sleeve, more or less, in that when you mentioned that I did freelance writing. I did freelance writing for D3Hoops.com, which is a website that covers Division III sports. Jared Washburn went to a Division III school, Wisconsin Oshkosh. I had previously spoken to people at Wisconsin Oshkosh. It was very easy for me to pick up the phone, call Wisconsin Oshkosh, tell them my sad sack story and say, hey, can I please speak to someone who can tell me a great Jared Washburn story? And they put me on the phone directly with the baseball coach. And the baseball coach told me how Jared Washburn learned how to throw a slider. I was like, this is perfect. I put it in front of the producer. He's like, oh, wow, cool. He gave it to John Miller and Joe Morgan, who were the announcers. They got a picture of Jared Washburn in the Wisconsin Oshkosh baseball cap. Everything's hunky-dory. Except in the first inning of the game, Jared Washburn gave up 4 runs. He never became the story. They had no interest in talking about him at any point during the game. However, I had accomplished what I needed to accomplish, which was that I had shown them that I could do something beyond the scope of the job. And it made a good impression on the producer. And the next week, the producer said, okay, let's do another one of those. And we did another one. And the next week, he said, let's do another. And we did another one. And doing that led to me coming up with other things. Hey, I'll come up with 10 stats that the announcers might like. And I actually, AOL instant messaging the announcers interesting stats about players that they didn't have. So that led to my bosses seeing that I was good, and that led to me being hired. That's a long story. Hopefully it didn't bore anyone, but I think there are a couple of good lessons in that. One, always, always, always take the shot at reaching out to someone if the door is even just the slightest bit ajar. And then two, once you get in the position, early impressions are important. If you're going to go for it and try and make a good early first impression, go for it full bore on something that you know that you're really good at, and do it that way. And those are the lessons that I would impart upon your young professional listeners.
And I think that's very important, because a lot of the temporary positions or internships that college students and young sport professionals are going into, it is doing the administrative work. It is printing Yes. papers, getting coffee. And they're always like, well, I can do more. I have experience. And to hear that you went out of your way, you shot your shot, you went to them and said, hey, I can do more. And not only that, but when you were given the opportunity, you actually showed up and did the work. And I think Yep. that's important. And that second point that you made, leaning into your strengths. A lot of times we worry about so much our weakness that we forget that, hey, we have these strengths and that we should lean onto that and not stop worrying about, like, we're not good at this, we're not good at that. It's like, no, you're good at something. Put that in the forefront and do something with it. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is your author. So are you mainly a New York Mets fan?
I have followed the Mets since I was 5. Okay. I am now a member of the Baseball Writers Association.
Yeah.
So I like to refer to myself as modestly agnostic, I guess, when it comes to baseball rooting interests, but it's there's plenty of evidence on the internet of the Met following that I have done in the past. Yes.
And that was very interesting because I'm mentioning this book that you wrote, right? Which is the Yankees Index, using the statistical information to tell a story about the history of the New York Yankees. And I was like, well, it seems like you're a big New York Mets fan. And it's interesting that you talked about, you know, this whole childhood, you're reading these different books and then you finally, you're an author of your own book. So what was that experience like?
So that came about as well. I'd always wanted to write a book. I have currently in my apartment, I'm looking around. I have probably in the neighborhood of 1,000 books in my apartment, which is absurd.
Yeah.
And I haven't even read all of them, but I've read a good number of them. And I have loved to read since I was like 5. And I always thought it would be cool to write something. When you work at somewhere like ESPN, you get opportunities to do things like proofread other people's books. I proofread Tim Kirchner's book after it came out, and then they made the changes for paperback. That was kind of informal, but that led to me proofreading and fact-checking and helping Buster Olney on his book. He wrote a book about a basketball coach, Don Meyer. He kind of went off his usual baseball stuff and wrote about a coach that he covered when he was a Cub newspaper reporter. And then Jason Stark reached out to me after we had been talking about proofreading books and said, we can do this formally. I can get you paid like by the publisher. And he did. And so when it came time to send the final report on Jason Stark's book, I sent it to the publisher and it was really long. Like it had a lot of more, it was more suggestions than corrections, but it kind of showed how seriously I had taken it. And the last thing I said to the publisher was, if you ever have a project that fits my skills, please don't hesitate to let me know. And he said, okay, and we moved on, and I didn't think I would ever hear from him again. So some months later, I made what became a viral video in which I recited the last out of the last, I don't know, it's like 60 to 70 World Series, which is a weird, silly memory obsession that I have where I used to be able to do it rapid fire. And it's funny if you watch it. And it got picked up. We put it on my Facebook page. Someone took it and posted it publicly. And then it wound up on Deadspin. So I had to call my boss at ESPN and say, I'm now on Deadspin. Sorry about that. But he was all right with it. And so the publishing company saw that. And that put me back front of mind for them. And a month or two later, they decided to continue a series in their books that they were doing that were like numerically inclined histories of teams. They had done the Mets and they had done the Tigers. They had done the Mets already, important part. So they reached out, they said, we know where you work, stats and information. This is all you're doing all day. We know that you're a writer. We know that you're diligent at fact-checking. Would you be interested in doing a book on the Yankees version of this book? And I was like, absolutely, come on. And my ESPN gave me permission. And it took 8 months to do. I got to call. I talked to Don Mattingly. I talked to a number of Yankee players from the 1970s, Willie Randolph, players from the 50s and 60s. I got to look up stories I had never looked up before. I went to the Hall of Fame and went through scrapbooks of old players. It was super fun. I will say this, when I went in the bookstore next to the Hall of Fame, I counted 95 Yankee books on their shelves. There are a lot of Yankee books out there. My book is distinct. It is definitely distinct. It has a lot of graphics. It's more colorful. It's for example, it's like for Joe DiMaggio, it's the number, the chapter is 56. Because he had the 56 game hitting streak. And the story that's in that chapter is like 3 pages, 4 pages about the hitting streak. Here's when it started. Here's when it ended. Here's what the newspapers were saying about it at the time. Here's what Joe DiMaggio was like as a hitter. all these different things. Easy to read, 3 to 4 pages. You could take the book in the bathroom, open to a random chapter, and you got something while you're sitting there. So yes, did it strike me that it was odd for someone who grew up liking the Mets to do a Yankees book? For sure. But that didn't really, that only bothered me in times when I would hit writer's block and I'd be like, you know, I really want to be doing a book about a team that I liked. Why am I doing a book about a team that I didn't like? But that would last like, I don't know, 10 minutes and then I'd move on. And I still get like a chill when I have 3 copies of it in my apartment. I still get a chill when I pick it up and hold it. It's cool. After 4 years, I finally like, the way that if you write a book, there are different ways you can get paid. You can get paid up front. You can get paid per copy. I got paid up front, but I also had a bonus if it hit a certain number of sales. After 4 years, it hit that number of sales. Wow. So I got like $20-$30 extra dollars out of it. So yeah, it is my best. Working at ESPN is awesome, but this is my best career accomplishment is writing a book.
That's crazy cool. I mean, that's something for me too. Like one of my future goals is also to write a book, to put together like all of these. I've interviewed over 70 sports industry professionals, and I want to put together a little book of all the excerpts, all the stories that all these amazing guests have told me. Mark, thank you for your time. And for the people out there who don't know, you know, Mark, you reached out about opportunities at Sports Info Solutions. Yep. Where can they look at these opportunities, or where can they watch for more opportunities that might pop up?
Sure. So Sports Info Solutions, we didn't talk about it too much, is a sports analytics company that services MLB, NFL, and NBA teams. We watch every game in the major leagues, Korea, Japan, college basketball. We pick players and we watch as much as we can. The NFL, we watch everything. The FBS, we watch every game, every play, and we chart it in great detail. The job openings in our company are usually seasonal. They are for people who do the game watching. You get trained in how to do that. You enter the data into software. You watch games. There are worse things you could be doing, certainly, than watching sports and typing in information. There's the R&D department, which then analyzes the information and tries to turn it into products that we could sell to teams. So openings would be found at sportsinfosolutions.com. I think you can go there. I think it's /careers. But if you go to the sportsinfosolutions.com page in the upper right, there's a list. Careers is one of the things that you can click on. And we constantly update that there are openings. Sportsinfo_SIS is the Twitter. We put our job postings there. You will see one for the baseball video scout job, which is a seasonal 5-month job where you're watching baseball games and tracking everything that happens. You'll see an ad for those just about every day for the next month or two.
Where could they follow you and connect with you on social media, Mark?
Sure. Mark A. Simon Says is my Twitter. Mark Simon Says was taken, unfortunately. So I've stuck my middle initial in there. Mark A. Simon Says is my Twitter. You can also find me on LinkedIn. Mark Simon there. Those are generally the two best places to connect with me. If people have, you know, why not? If people have specific questions, mark@sportsinfosolutions.com. I spell my first name with a K, not a C.
Perfect. Well, again, thank you, Mark, for taking your time. And to the people out there listening to Sports is a Job listeners, please visit sportsisjob.com for all of our 3 other podcasts that we host as well. And if you're listening to this on the Apple Podcast, please subscribe and leave us a rating. And like I always say, we are all on our own individual journeys, but you are not alone.